Fletcher's Fortune by Gregory MacDonald. Copyright 1978 by the author. This recording of the reading of Fletcher's Fortune was published by arrangement with Gregory MacDonald and was produced in 1988 by Books on Tape Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any part thereof may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authority from Books on Tape Incorporated. Please observe the following procedures as you listen to these tapes. You may keep your book for 30 days from date of receipt by you, but after that time we charge additional rental of 25 cents per day. Dates are checked by postmark. Please return this book at the earliest possible time so another subscriber can have the use of this recording. To return cassettes to us, simply make sure they are all packaged in their plastic cassette cases and in proper order in the mailing container. Kindly seal the mailing container for return. Postage is already paid. Drop in any mailbox for return to Books on Tape. Unless you are at home during the day, you will probably find it more convenient to have tapes mailed to you at your business address rather than your home. Reason is that postmen cannot leave packages if no one is there to receive them. Should a cassette fail to play properly, hold it flat in the palm of your hand and slap it smartly against a hard, flat surface. If this does not work, or if you cannot otherwise free the reels, call us at our regular customer service number. Give us the name of the book and number of the cassette. We will immediately send you a replacement at no charge. Discard the broken cassette. Fletcher's Fortune by Gregory MacDonald. This book consists of 38 chapters and is 253 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. Snatched from bliss on the Riviera, Fletch was whisked to the journalism convention with a suitcase full of bugging devices and a bizarre assignment. Dig up some juicy scandals on Walter March, the ruthless newspaper tycoon, and the rest of the American press establishment. Then Walter March was found lying face up with a nasty pair of scissors stuck in his back. It was the crime of the century, and a hell of a story. With all the red-hot action coming through his tape machine from the other bedrooms, and two magnificent women longing for a taste of his bedroom manner, Fletch was taking his sweet time cracking a story worth more than a fistful of Pulitzer Prizes. Only he hadn't planned on the surprise arrival of the Vice President, just in time for the scorching kiss of a bullet. Dedication for Susie, Chris, and Doug. Chapter 1. CIA, Mr. Fletcher. Would you mind spelling that? Coming into the cool dark of the living room, blinded by the sun on the beach, Fletch had smelled cigar smoke and slowed at the French doors. There were two forms of men sprawled on his living room furniture, one in the middle of the divan, the other on a chair. The Central Intelligence Agency, one of the forms muttered. Fletch's bare feet crossed the marble floor to the carpet.
Sorry, old chaps, you've got the wrong bod. Fletch is away for a spell, letting me use his digs.
Fletch held out his hand to the form on the divan.
Always do feel silly introducing myself whilst adorned in swimming gear, but when on the Riviera, do as the sons of habitués do. Isn't that the motto? The name's Arbuthnot, Fletch said. Freddy Arbuthnot.
The man on the divan had not shaken his hand. The man in the chair snorted.
Arbuthnot, it's not, said the man in the chair.
Not, said Fletch, not?
Not, said the man.
The patterns of their neckties had become visible to Fletch. His nose was in a stream of cigar smoke. There were two cigar butts and a live cigar in the ashtray on the coffee table. Next to the ashtray, on the surface of the table, was a photograph of Fletch in the United States Marine Corps uniform, smiling. Fletch said, "Golly."
"Didn't want to disturb you on the beach with your girlfriend," said the man in the chair. "The two of you look too cute down there, frisking on the sand."
"Adorable," uttered the man on the divan. Both men were dressed in full suits, collars undone, ties pulled loose. Both their faces were wet with perspiration.
"Let's see some identification," Fletch said.
This time he held his hand out to the man in the chair, palm up. The man looked up at Fletch a moment, into his eyes, as if to gauge the exact degree of Fletch's seriousness, then rolled left on his hams and pulled his wallet from his right rear trouser pocket.
On the left flap was the man's photograph. On the right was a card which said, Central Intelligence Agency, United States of America. A few dates, a few numbers, and the man's name. Eggers, Gordon. You too. Fletch held out his hand to the man on the divan. His name was Richard Fabens. Eggers and Fabens. Fletch handed them back their credentials. Would you guys mind if I got out of these wet trunks and took a shower? Not at all, said Eggers, standing up, but let's talk first. Coffee? If we wanted coffee, said Fabens, standing up, we would have made it ourselves. Part of the CIA training, I expect, Fletch said. Trespass and coffee making. A Bloody Mary? Something to raise the spirits on this Sunday noon? Cool it, Fletcher, said Eggers. You don't need time to think. He put the tip of his index finger against Fletch's chest and pressed. You're going to do what you're told. Get it? Fletch shouted into his face, Yes, sir! Suddenly, Eggers' right hand became a fist and smashed into precisely the right place in Fletch's stomach with incredible force, considering the shortness of the swing. Fletch was hunched over in a chair, trying to breathe. Enough of your bull, Fletcher. I caught a fish like him once. Fabens was relighting his cigar. In the Gulf Stream. He was still wriggling and fighting even after I had him aboard. I had to beat the shit out of him to convince him he was caught. Even then. He blew a billow of cigar smoke at Fletch. Mostly I beat him on the head. Yuck, said Fletch. Shall we beat you on the head, Fletcher? Eggers asked. Fletch said, Anything's better than that cigar's smoke. Eggers' voice turned gentle. Are you going to listen to us, Irwin? Fletch said, El Cheapo. Turning from the French doors, El Cheapo in mouth, Fabens asked, What happened to your girlfriend? Where'd she go? Home, Fletch squeezed out breath. She lives next door. He sucked in breath. With her husband. He raised his head in time to see Eggers and Fabens glance at each other. Husband? He sleeps late, Fletch breathed. Sundays. Jesus, said Eggers. Wriggle, wriggle, said Fabens. Fletch straightened his back in the chair. He ignored the tears on his cheeks. Okay, guys, what's the big deal? No big deal. Eggers rubbed his hands together. Easy. You're just the right man for the job, said Fabens. What job? You know the American Journalism Alliance? Eggers asked. Yes. They're having a convention, Fabens said. So? You're going. Hell, I'm not a working journalist anymore. I'm unemployed. I haven't worked as a journalist in over a year. What do you mean, said Eggers. You had a piece in Bronson's last month. That was on the paintings of Cappelletti. So? It's journalism. Once a shithead, always a shithead, said Fabens. May your cigar kill you, said Fletch. You're going, said Eggers. I'm not even a member of the AJA. You are, said Eggers. I used to be. You are. I haven't paid my dues in years. In fact, I never paid my dues. We paid your dues. You're a member. You paid my dues? We paid your dues. Very thoughtful of you, Fletch said. Think nothing of it, said Fabens. Anything for a shithead. Fletch said, You could have spent the money on a better grade of cigars, preferably Cuban. I'm a government employee. Fabens looked at the tip of his cigar. What do you expect? Peace. The convention starts tomorrow, Eggers said, outside of Washington in Virginia. Tomorrow? We didn't want you to have too long to think about it. No way. Tomorrow, Fabens said, you're going to be there. I'm having lunch with this guy in Genoa tomorrow. Tuesday, I'm flying down to Rome for an exhibition. Tomorrow, said Fabens. I don't have a ticket. I haven't packed. We have your ticket. Eggers waved his hand. You can do your own packing. Fletch sat forward, placing his forearms on his thighs. Okay, he said. What's this about? At the airport in Washington, near the Transworld Airlines main counters, you will go to a baggage locker. Fabens took a key from his jacket pocket and looked at it. Locker number 719. In that locker you will find a reasonably heavy brown suitcase.
Full of bugging equipment, said Eggers.
Fletch said, shit, no.
Fabens flipped the key onto the coffee table.
Shit, yes.
No way, said Fletch.
Absolutely, said Fabens.
You will then take another airplane to Hendricks, Virginia, to the old Hendricks plantation where the convention is being held, and you will immediately set out planting listening devices in the rooms of all your colleagues, if I may use such a term for you shitheads of the Fourth Estate.
It's not going to happen, said Fletch.
It's going to happen, said Fabens.
In the brown suitcase, and forgive us, we had trouble matching your luggage exactly, there's also a recording machine and plenty of tape. You're going to tape the most private bedroom conversations of the most important people in American journalism.
You're crazy.
Eggers shook his head.
Not crazy.
You are crazy, Fletch stood up. You've told me more than you should have, bunglers. You've given me a story.
Fletch grabbed the key from the coffee table.
One phone call and this story is going to be all over the world in 36 hours.
Fletch backed off the carpet onto the marble floor.
Blow smoke in my face. You're not going to get this key from me.
Fabens smiled, holding his cigar chest high.
We haven't told you too much. We've told you too little.
What haven't you told me?
Eggers shook his head, seemingly in embarrassment.
We've got something on you.
What have you got on me? I'm not a priest or a politician. There's no way you can spoil my reputation.
Taxes, Mr. Fletcher.
What?
Fabens said again.
Taxes.
Fletch blinked.
What about them?
You haven't paid any.
Nonsense, of course I pay taxes.
Not nonsense, Mr. Fletcher.
Fabens used the ashtray.
Look at it our way. Your parents lived in the state of Washington, neither of them well-to-do nor from well-to-do families.
They were nice people.
I'm sure, nice yes, rich no. Yet here you are living in a villa in Cagna, Italy, the Mediterranean sparkling through your windows, driving a Porsche, unemployed.
I retired young.
In your lifetime you have paid almost no federal taxes.
I had expenses.
You haven't even filed a return, ever.
I have a very slow accountant.
I should think he would be slow, continued Fabens, seeing you have money in Rio, in the Bahamas, here in Italy, probably in Switzerland.
I also have a very big sense of insecurity, Fletch said.
I should think you would have, Fabens said, under the circumstances.
All right, I haven't paid my taxes. I'll pay my taxes, pay the penalties. But after I phone in the story that you guys are bugging the convention of the American Journalism Alliance.
It's the not filing the tax reports that's the crime, Mr. Fletcher, punishable by jail sentences.
So what? Let him catch me.
Eggers was sitting in a chair, hands behind his head, staring at Fletch.
Peekaboo,
Fabens said.
We have caught you.
Bull, I can outrun you two tubs any time.
Mr. Fletcher, do you want to know why you haven't filed any tax returns?
Why haven't I filed any tax returns?
Because you can't say where the money came from.
I found it at the foot of my bed one morning.
Eggers laughed, turned his head to Fabens, and said,
Maybe he did.
You should have reported it, said Fabens.
I'll report it.
You have never earned more than a reporter's salary, about the price of that Porsche in your driveway, in any one year, legally.
Who reports gambling earnings?
Where'd you get the money? Over $2 million, possibly three, maybe more.
I went scuba diving off the Bahamas and found a Spanish galleon loaded with trading stamps.
Crime on top of crime.
Fabens put his cigar stub in the ashtray.
10, 20, 30 years in prison.
Maybe by the time you get out, laughed Eggers, the girl next door will be divorced.
Oh, Gordon, Fabens said, we forgot to tell Mr. Irwin Maurice Fletcher that in one of my pockets I have his TWA tickets to Hendricks, Virginia. In my other pocket, I have his extradition papers.
Eggers slapped his kidney.
And I, Richard, have a warm pair of Italian handcuffs.
Fletch sat down.
Gee, guys, these are my friends. You're asking me to bug my friends.
Fabens said,
I thought a good journalist didn't have any friends.
Fletch muttered, just other journalists.
Eggers said. You don't have a choice, Fletcher.
Damn.
Fletch was turning the baggage locker key over in his hands. I thought you CIA guys stopped all this domestic spying, bugging journalists.
Who's spying? Said Eggers.
You've got us all wrong, said Fabens. This is simply a public relations effort. We're permitted to do public relations. All we want are a few friends in the American press.
You never know, said Eggers. If we know what some of their personal problems are, we might even be able to help them out.
All we want is to be friendly, said Fabens. Especially do we want to be friendly with Walter March. You know him?
Publisher, March Newspapers, I used to work for him.
That's right. A very powerful man. I don't suppose you happen to know what goes on in his bedroom.
Christ, said Fletch, he must be over 70.
So what, said Eggers. I've been reading a book.
Walter March, repeated Fabens. We wish to make good friends with Walter March.
So I do this thing for you, and what then? Fletch asked. Then I go to jail?
No, no. Then your tax problems disappear as if by magic. They fall in the Potomac River, never to surface again.
How?
We'll take care of it, answered Eggers.
Can I have that in writing?
No.
Can I have anything in writing?
No.
Fabens put the Transworld Airlines ticket folder on the coffee table.
Genoa, London, Washington, Hendricks, Virginia. Your plane leaves at 4 o'clock.
Fletch looked at his sunburned arm.
I need a shower.
Eggers laughed.
Putting on a pair of pants wouldn't hurt any either.
Fabian said,
I take it you choose to go home without handcuffs?
Fletch said, Does Pruella the pig pucker her pussy when she poops in the woods?
Chapter 2.
So you're going to bug the entire American press establishment just because someone asked you to?
Gibbs's voice was barely audible. Fletch had had a better connection when he had called from London. Across the National Airport waiting room, a brass quartet was beginning to play America. Fletch pushed the brown suitcase he had taken from locker number 719 out of the telephone booth with his foot and slammed the door.
Fletch?
Hello, I was closing the door.
Are you in Washington now?
Yes.
Did you have a nice flight?
No.
Sorry to hear that. Why not?
Sat next to a Methodist minister.
What's wrong with sitting next to a Methodist minister?
Are you kidding? The closer to heaven we got, the smugger he got.
Jesus, Fletch.
That's what I say.
Can you still sing a few bars of the old Northwestern fight song?
Never could.
In college, Don Gibbs had believed in the football team. He was a second-string tackle. Beer, a case between Saturday night and Monday morning. The Chevrolet car, he had a sedan painted blue and yellow. The Methodist church, for women and children. And applied physics, for an eventual guaranteed income from American industry, which he also believed in, but which, upon his graduation, had not returned his faith by offering him a job. He had not believed in poetry, painting, philosophy, people, or any of the other P's treated in the humanities, an attitude generally accepted by American industry, but not when manifested by the candidate for a job so obviously. He and Fletch had been roommates in their freshman year.
The only thing I learned in college, Fletch said into the phone, is that all our less successful classmates went to work for the government.
Who placed this call?
Gibbs's throat muscles had tightened.
Tell me that, Fletcher. Did you call me or did I call you? Are you asking me to help you or am I asking you to help me?
Gee whiz, Don. You forgot to take your insensitive pill this morning.
I'm sick to death of you guys knocking us in the press whenever you feel like it. But whenever you have a problem that hurts even a little bit, you're crying over the phone at us.
Bullshit, Don. I've never knocked you in the press. You've never been important enough to knock.
Oh, yeah?
They might as well have been 17-year-old freshmen arguing at 11 o'clock at night over who got to take a shower first. Fletch always hated to wait 20 minutes while Gibbs went through his shower routine. Gibbs hated the mirrors steamed by the time he got to take his shower.
Fletch said, Yeah. Furthermore, I'm not asking you a favor. I'm asking you a question.
What's the question, Irwin Maurice?
Do you have the legal right to bug the entire American press establishment?
No, absolutely not. His voice lowered. But then again, Irwin Maurice Fletcher, I suspect you always have bugged the entire American press establishment. Funny, funny. He had to grant that. He had to give him something. Since when are you a lawyer? I'm not asking for legal advice. I know it's not nice to bug my friends with the intention of blackmail. Even if I'm not the guy who's going to be putting the screws to him, you shits are. My question is, do I have to do this? There was a long silence from the other end of the phone. Fletch said, "Hello, Don?" The line clicked. "Fletch? Hello. I'm trying to answer your question. Would you mind going over all the facts again?" Don Gibbs's voice had moderated. It had become more mature, reasonable, responsible. It had also lowered half an octave. "I gave you all the facts when I called you from London, Don. Just to make sure I've got everything straight. You're just trying to take advantage of a local phone call from an old friend to make you look busy at your desk," Fletch said. "Bastard." Fletch knew it wasn't a local phone call. The number he had dialed supposedly was a Pentagon number. But he knew he was talking to Don Gibbs in that curious underground headquarters of American intelligence in the mountains of North Carolina. "I have a plane to catch." "Just run it by me again, Fletch." "Okay, two of your goons broke into my house in Cagni, Italy yesterday morning, Sunday." "Names?" "Gordon Eggers and Richard Fabens." "Eggers, Gordon, and Fabens, Richard, right?" "You government jerks do everything backwards. Did you get their identification numbers off their credentials?" "No, but they had numbers. Lots of numbers." "Doesn't matter. When you say they broke into your house, what precisely do you mean?" "I think they entered through the French windows, doors, whatever you call them. The house was open." "Did they actually break anything?" "Amazingly enough, no." "So they entered your house?" "They entered it uninvited, unexpected, unwanted. They trespassed." "What are you doing with a house in Italy?" "I live there." "Yeah, but why? I mean, are you working for a wire service or something?" "No, I'm doing some writing on art. I had a piece in Bronson's last month. I'm trying to do a biography of Edgar Arthur Tharp, Jr." "The cowboy's an Indian artist?" "Gee, you know something." "Wasn't he a friend of Winslow Homer?" "No." "Have you given up investigative reporting altogether?" Fletch dropped a pause into the conversation. "I'm on a sabbatical." "Fired again, huh? I'm glad I'm not one of the more obvious successes in my class." "There's no job security," Fletch said, "without complete obscurity." "So what did these two gentlemen want?" "They weren't gentlemen." "Sorry to hear that. We usually send only our finest abroad. I haven't made it yet." "Not surprised. What did they want?" Across the terminal, the band was playing "The Eyes of Texas Are Upon You." "They told me to come to the AJA convention here in Hendricks, Virginia, and bug my ever-loving colleagues, get tape recordings of their bedroom conversations, and turn the tapes over to them for blackmail purposes. They said there would be a suitcase full of bugging equipment here in a locker in Washington, and it is here." Through the door of the phone booth, Fletch noticed how badly the suitcase he had just taken from locker 719 matched the rest of his luggage. "Are you telling me you don't know all this already, Don?" Don Gibbs said, "It's not often we get another perspective on one of our operations." "When I called you from London last night, I asked you to look into this." "I have," Don said. "I've checked pretty thoroughly." "So why am I standing in a phone booth late for a plane I don't want to take anyway, going over it all with you again?" "Tell me again why you agreed to do it. I just want to see if it checks out with what I know." "Oh, for God's sake, Don, I'm being blackmailed." "I know that, but tell me again how." "Well, it won't hurt to tell me, Fletcher. Don't I already know?" "Nice guy." The floor of the phone booth was filthy. "Taxes." "You've never paid any?" "Just what was withheld from my salary." He was pressing the phone against his ear. "Even for those years, I never filed a return." "Uh-huh. And what about the last year or two?" "I've never filed a return." "It says here you have money you can't account for, is that right?" "Yeah." "What?" "Yes." "So why are you calling me?" "You're my friend in the American intelligence community." "We're not friends." Acquaintance. I'm trying to report to someone in the home office, someone responsible, that your guys down the line are blackmailing me to bug the private lives of some of the most important members of the American press, newspapers, radio, and television.
Don't you think our right hand knows what our left hand is doing?
No, I don't. And if you do, you should be ashamed of yourselves.
I'm not ashamed of myself. Nobody's blackmailing me.
Come on, Don, Jesus Christ.
How do you think we gather intelligence, Fletcher? By reading your lousy newspapers from network news?
Don, this isn't legitimate, and you know it.
I know lots of things. Gibbs's voice had risen again slightly.
You said when you called from London that the guys who talked to you were particularly interested in getting information on old Mr. March.
Yes, that's right. Walter March. I used to work for him.
What does that mean to you?
That they single out March?
Yes.
He's an incredibly powerful man. March newspapers.
Fletcher's right ear was becoming hot and sore.
Listen, Don, I've only got a few minutes to make that plain if I'm going to make it. Are you telling me?
No, Mr. Fletcher. I'm telling you.
It was a much older, deeper voice. Who's this? Fletch asked.
Robert Engelhart, the voice said. Don's department head. I've been listening in.
Man. Alone in the phone booth, Fletch grinned. You guys can't do anything straight.
I guess you're calling Don to ask if this assignment is something you have to take on.
You've got it.
What do you think the answer is?
It sounds to me like the answer is yes.
You have the right impression.
There was another click on the line. Fletch asked, Don, are you still there?
Yes.
I know you guys are so wrapped up in your own mysteriousness you can't answer a simple question yes or no, but why the extra degree of mysteriousness about this?
What mysteriousness?
Come on, Don.
We've just been trying to make absolutely sure that the AJA convention is still on.
Still on? Why wouldn't it be?
You journalists are always the last with the news, aren't you?
What news?
Walter March was murdered this morning at the convention. So long, Fletcher.
Chapter 3.
Hello, hello, Fletch said as he buckled himself into the seat next to the girl with the honey-colored hair and the brown eyes. I get along well with everybody.
You don't even get along with plane schedules, she answered. They've been holding the plane for you for 10 minutes.
It was a 12-seater. I was on the phone, Fletch said, talking to an old uncle. He doesn't talk as fast as he used to.
The pilot slammed the passenger door and pulled the handle up.
I forgive you, the girl said. Why are you so tan?
I just arrived from Italy this morning.
Well, that would have been excuse enough.
The pilot had started the engines and turned the plane away from the terminal.
Ask me if I had a nice flight.
They had to shout. The plane had 3 propellers, one of them right over their heads.
Did you have a nice flight?
No.
Taxiing to the runway, the small plane was very bouncy.
Ask me why I didn't have a nice flight.
Why didn't you have a nice flight?
I sat next to a Methodist minister.
She said,
so what?
The closer to heaven we got, the smugger he got. She shook her head.
Jet lag affects different people in different ways,
Fletch said. My uncle didn't think it was funny either.
Not only that, the girl said, but telling it to your uncle probably took up the whole 10 minutes we waited. I'm a loyal nephew.
The plane stopped. Each of the 3 engines was gunned. With the left engine still running high, the brakes were released and the plane swung onto the runway. Gathering speed, it bounced and vibrated down the runway until the bounces got big enough, at which point the plane popped into the air.